This is the moment where at the conference I'm nervous for the first time because we have a lot of moving parts here on stage that might go wrong, and I've been working in accessibility for a long time and I've yet to find the first presentation where a screen reader doesn't crash, which is actually only on stage. It must be like some weird karma thing because day-to-day work with them works well. And Frontiers put together an accessibility panel that hasn't been covered in the last years a lot, and the problem that I always have with accessibility presentations is always people who are developers who are telling us what people with disabilities need. And why do we play telephone if we have very capable people with different disabilities telling us what their issues are when they use the web and how they use the web? So here and now it's going to start with the fun of pronouncing names. We've got Bram Duvignon. Mm-hmm. Antoine Egemann and Bor Verkroost.
Correct.
Hey, great. There we go. So, why don't we go through like from starting from left to right. So, what are you, what do you do, and how do you use the web normally?
My name is, as you said, Bor Verkroost. That's really quick.
Show off.
don't mention me on Twitter. It will go over the speakers.
Okay. No, I've started in 1999 with Games Hotline. So I've been basically involved in both the internet and game technically all the things about accessibility. In 2004, I couldn't really keep it up with the hotline because of my degrading condition. And therefore, I started a more consultancy-based company, focusing, amongst other things, especially on game accessibility, which I have lately done several things about. I've done that in close collaboration with GameAccessibilityGuidelines.com, who also look at how can games be made in a way that a broad audience can play them, and even some niche markets, exactly the same way as we're doing here today, by looking at what accessibility issues lie before us and what we can relatively easily tackle, in my opinion. Hmm.
And did you find that that in terms of feedback, that making amends to make things more accessible made it easier for the whole users as well? Because that's what we always claim is a great win if you put accessibility in.
True. I think one of the most prominent examples of that would be the thing I've benefited greatly from, and I suppose most people here with or without disabilities have benefited greatly from, is the fact that websites have started to slowly change to become less scrollable. So the least scrolling for me is better, because I need to be there in just a few clicks of the button, and not by endlessly pushing two buttons or having to hold one button and then scroll down the other one. I think that's a general accessibility issue that also greatly benefits, well, my group.
It's also an annoyance issue. I mean, I love when old school newspaper sites cut up an article into five pages and have like forward and backward links.
Exactly.
I always use the print version then, because yes, it's on one screen.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's the same thing, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So our second contestant, how do you use the web and what do you do?
I am Bram Duvignon. I started out a few years ago as a back-end web developer. After that, I did a year of developing specifically solutions for the blind, not really web-related, but more in company settings where someone who is blind was having a job or getting a job and couldn't use the internal company systems, and I had to go there and somehow hack around all the issues that raise up. And these days I'm a freelance developer. I do backend web development, and if there is anything to do in the accessibility field where my expertise can be used as a blind user and a blind developer, I do that kind of projects. I really like to combine my point of view as an end user and my advice from a developer perspective to make things better accessible.
Hmm. I was lucky enough to work next to a PHP developer who was blind as well for 6 years, so I saw all of that at first go. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are just like, how could somebody program blind? So what is the trick that you're using mostly? Like, how do you see what you type, so to say?
Well, the two basic things of output are speech and braille. So that's text-to-speech, that's a technique that converts text into spoken output. And braille display, that's a device that's here at the table beneath my laptop, gives braille output. This one contains 40 cells, 40 characters, so I can put 40 characters of text on the display. And it's just controlled by software, and the software is called the screen reader. So whenever I want to read more than 40 characters, I need to scroll using this device. So speech is usually faster for me to get information, because the normal speech rate is, there's a slider, it's called speech rate on the Mac, and it goes from 0 to 100, and yours is usually at 80 or 85. So that that's quite fast, and then you can really easily skim around and listen what's there. But if you really want to read, say, code and see where all the quotes are and all the little annoying semicolons and other things you have to put in there, then you just read it in braille.
So you normally go for the speech, so you don't write 40 lines of code and annoy other developers that have to work with your code.
No,
because that's always like, is it 80 characters or 60 or 100? How do we do the style guide? It's pretty impressive when you see. I found, we talked about this quickly earlier. My colleague was always complaining about interfaces that didn't work for him. That was in our company, which is a large company that is purple and has a Y in it. And when he complained to people, it was always a back and forth. So instead, he actually wrote little grease monkey scripts and sent them to people and said, like, look at the site with this grease monkey script on. This is how I could use the website. And that actually made them much, much more responsive, and out of a sudden realizing it's not that much of a work, because people are unhappy to change code that is existing or interfaces that are existing. But if you show them that it's not much work, it's much easier. Do you find there is a positive attitude towards when you talk to people and you say, like, okay, I'm a blind user, but I'm also a developer? Can you talk better on the same level?
Yes. One of my recent projects was a large company here in Netherlands who wanted to do user tests with blind people. But after all, they preferred to test with me because I could not only say what wasn't working, but also how they probably easily would be able to fix it. So that that saves lots of work and time, because you not just get a complaint, but also at least part of the solution. When I look at a website and I just see, well, this is something clickable, but it's not a link or a button. Well, it's easily. It should be easily fixable by a company.
Hmm. So, Antoine, last but not least. So, what do you do? What do you do? How do you use the internet?
I started this week as a teacher.
Nice.
I teach kids HTML, CSS.
Yes.
Web usability design.
Don't tell them the stuff that actually Matthias showed us.
No. Well, maybe in their third year or something.
Yeah.
I also teach them Dreamweaver. I'm sorry. Photoshop, that kind of thing.
We have to deal with all kind of disabilities on this planet.
Yeah. So that, I know.
So, this is pretty cool. I mean, we have this WebMaker project in Mozilla as well, where we teach basic web literacy and HTML. Do you find that interactive editors that show immediately results are much easier in this, or do you still go through the, like, here's your editor, save it, open it on the browser?
I still do. I have been following brackets right now.
Yeah.
And I kind of love the fact that it's live updating. So
yeah.
I would really like to see all of them go in that direction, but I still have that workflow of doing something, saving it, refreshing my browser, and going like, nope.
Cool. As I understand it, you have a few demos for us to show when you get online, where you get stuck, what is our most problems out there. Shall we just dive into that? Do you want to start? Or
sure.
Can we switch to his computer then?
Well, it's just mainly a few examples I wanted to show you, because for me, accessibility means, of course, I spend a lot of time online, both doing all the mail stuff and keeping up with my contacts, social networking, of course, and what I used to do with the game hotline was to look up a lot of information that I got a lot of questions about, like what's the sixth key in the Zelda 7th dungeon, which I sometimes had to look up, although I played, well, virtually all games myself. But the thing is, with the accessibility, it's mostly small and little things. For starters, and you cannot really see that out there, but for me, it's easier to, this laptop has like a touch screen, but it's easier for me to have a touchpad, sorry. But it has
That's people tweeting his name.
Really?
No, that was a timeout that I had to enter my password, otherwise
oh.
It would go.
Oh, or else the system will go crazy. All right. Well, no, I use a touchpad on this laptop, but preferably I use a mouse, because one of the accessibility issues I have is because of my many hand surgeries, and there are now in total 60, my hands are often totally bandaged. Now I have a part out of the bandage, but usually it can be bandaged as well, in which case all things like touchpads, iPads, or everything touch-related won't work. I even have to switch on my PlayStation 3 using my elbow. So that's one of the things that maybe causes me A, to use a mouse, and B, to never buy an iPad, which really I would like to have, because it has a lot of nice features. And for websites, it's like I said, scrolling is, for me, is a real issue. I used to use the Control F key combination very often, just to look up the word, because I know where I want to look, and then it easily scrolls down itself. But I wanted to show you two examples. This is a well-known Dutch youth network, which has a really busy website, and for me it's sometimes a bit, sorry again, it's sometimes a bit too cramped up. And what you can see, it has incredible many options that are pretty close together. And for me now, that's not a problem, but in days that I am I'm lesser physical capable, I have trouble focusing on the exact same thing. What they did do, however, and I will show you, once you get a little bit outside the Dropbox, as you can see, it doesn't immediately disappear. There are a lot of websites out there that once you slightly go off the track, it immediately disappears, the need to scroll back up again and redo the whole thing again. And the other example I wanted to show you, in a site which is more, as you can see, it's Al Jazeera, it's more widened up, it's wider, it has a space in between the headlines. And it's all pretty much focused in one streak, in which case when you click on one of the items, of course you get another selection, but it doesn't have the endless scrolling out and scrolling in kinds of menus, which is for me a main thing which saves me a incredible lot of time when I'm working. So that's mainly the focus of my accessibility. And the thing is, and I was talking with that with Antoine here a little earlier, is that a lot of things you learn to work your way around them, and you can use those websites even if they're not that handy. But once I started to really pay attention to it, I found that websites who have a more broad stream and who are not cramped up have a lot more appeal to me. Of course, also visually, but also in accessibility terms. And I think that's basically one of the important things I wanted to say here today, because that's, for me, it just saves me a hell of a lot of time.
It's basic usability. I mean, we when we're on a train or something, or we move our hands around, we don't want to lose the menu as well.
And exactly.
It has been a best practice for years, but I keep seeing it badly implemented because just people use menu systems that they don't know or they cannot actually change, and it's good to see that. What was fascinating me about when people told me that you're going to be on this, and I have to plug this because I'm fascinated by it, is that your condition, I have a colleague that has exactly the same condition. The difference is that that person works on the developer tools in Firefox and is a JavaScript developer.
Yeah.
So he writes most of the developer tool stuff that you see in them and actually knows firsthand that there should be bigger spaces. And it's just incredible to see that, because as developers, we always feel like, oh, we got to do something for people. But it's just, you can do things if you're just empowered.
When I pick a new laptop or a new computer, I always look at the keyboards if the keys are a little bit apart. You have keys you have to press in very deep, and keys that are pretty much layered on top of the keyboard. So you only have to use a very light push, and you don't have to push it all the way inward. Because as you can see, I have my fingers are folded in a way, so I can really stretch one finger to push in a button. And as you said, one of your colleagues has the same condition. It might be worthwhile to tell in short what it is. It's a very rare genetic disorder called EB, which basically doesn't allow the skin to build up its layers as it should. And it also makes that, in my case, not all cases, but in my case at least, it makes the fingers go into a fist. So I have most of my fingers still, and I can feel them as fingers, the same as you. I even make the same gestures, but you don't see them.
That's handy.
But, so how many people have you flipped up? They're folded together, pretty much.
How many people have you flipped up already? Like, you can make rude gestures without people realizing it.
Yeah, oh, cool. A lot. Oh, a lot, I suppose.
One question here is does zooming help? Can you zoom into a website and then have better space to get the menus out? But I guess the problem is then that you can't read as many menu items.
Exactly. I want to keep the general view. I'm a quick searcher, so I need to keep up the pace. If I have to zoom in every, then I'll lose time zooming, and then I don't gain as much on accessibility itself.
It's very interesting because seeing that people say touch interfaces are so much more accessible to children and to elderly, and people are much easier to touch a screen than they understand that horrible keyboard thing. And sometimes it just doesn't really mean the same thing. And that's, in general, that was always my problem with accessibility panels, is that we just talked about blind users and said that is accessibility. And sometimes doing something for one disability to help it is actually doing it worse for others.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not an exact black and white science. There's lots of shades of gray there, so.
True.
Cool, thank you very much. So talking of shades of gray, how about we take a look at what screen reader users problems have and what we can help you with and where you actually fix other people's problems because they don't listen to you if you email them. So can we switch to the second computer, please? You're alive.
Okay.
Might be good to tell you.
So first of all, to give you an impression of what I'm hearing usually when I'm working, it sounds a bit like this.
Finder, desktop. Safari, about going blank, window, HTML content.
Who could make a word about of that?
Sounded Dutch to me.
It was English.
Well, we saw an English talk with the same speed earlier, but...
So you should get used to it by now, but... Let's slow it down a little bit. It's now on 80%.
75%.
Let's make it 50 or something.
50%. 45%.
Oh, 45. Well, when I do the same thing that I did at the higher speed.
Finder, desktop. Safari, about colon blank, window, HTML content.
Well, that's somewhat more understandable, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, to give a good example of of accessibility, or what works quite well for me is Google Search. I'm explicitly mentioning Google Search because some of the other Google products are not really that good.
Google Search
or that usable.
Search Google.
So I activate the search bar, or in this Safari it's one input bar by now. Let's Google for frontiers.
Here's.es. Unhighlighted. Selection deleted.
Now auto completion, please.
Frontiers. Highlighted.
Well, there we are. Google Search. I could start reading this page. It goes like this.
List 11 items.
Oh, there's an iPhone going off somewhere to the right over there. Please turn it off.
Plus prom. Search. Images. Maps. Play. YouTube. News. Gmail. Drive. Cap.
And that little beep, that's the indication of a link. You can choose if it says link or just beeps, and I prefer a little beep. If I had to reach my search results by just sitting back and waiting
calendar,
for this.
Calendar, more, web, Google search button, list four items, drop.
Take some time. Okay, shut up. There's an easier way. And that's because Google implemented headings in this page. So I'm now going to use a command to jump to the next heading. It goes like this.
Heading level 2, search options, clickable. Heading level 2, search results. Heading level 3, visited, frontiers, Vakvar and Eigenbohr front-end developers.
Yeah, and that's some Dutch in an English speech synthesizer. That's always a good combination.
Which heading is why people should always put the lang attributes in, because otherwise you will get these problems. If it had a lang attribute now on that result, it would have switched to the Dutch voice, right?
Not on Mac. Still not on Mac. On iPhone it does.
Oh, dear Lord. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Max.
Yeah.
Heading level 3, Tor Bank. heading level 3, Vega Tor Bank. Heading level 3, visited, Frontiers 2012.
So I can go from heading to heading and see what my results are. And if I want to see the snippet for the result, I just navigate from the heading.
Entering main results details button. Frontiers 2012 will take place on Thursday 4th and Friday 5th of heading level 3, Vega Tor Bank.
Well, it's a very short snippet.
Heading level 3, visited, Frontiers 2012.
I could also make a list of all these headings to easily jump to one.
Links 68 items, landmarks headings 15 items, 2 search results, 3 frontiers, 3 frontiers 2012, 3 frontiers 2011.
And you see the level of the heading and the title. And what's interesting is that there's a heading level 2 search options,
2
and search results, and all results are on level 3, as it should be.
Two.
One interesting aspect is that there's no heading level 1 here. what you would expect.
It's bad for search engine optimization. Weird, isn't it?
Well, I never Googled for Google, actually. I don't know.
Heading.
But anyway, that's how you can easily jump to a certain area of the page.
So this is VoiceOver now, isn't it?
This is VoiceOver, yes. That's a screen reader built into Apple products. It's all called VoiceOver, but it's a totally different code base usually. It's built into iPhone, iPad, iPod, Mac. And that's quite unique because you can I could get one of the other Macs here and I could work with it. That's a great concept.
And it comes for free with the operating system, yes. Which is not too expensive either. So more expensive operating systems could come out with screen readers as well, right?
If they want it, I guess. Yeah. But it's built in technology, and that's quite good. I think that's the way to go.
So what are your biggest stumbling blocks? What are the things that are easy to fix, but people get wrong all the time?
Well, quite a lot, actually. Things that really get wrong is the really annoying thing these days, I think, is the real web application stuff. Why? Because you have a website, and you are expecting some kind of interaction. If I have an email application, and I'm using a mouse, for example, I expect to double click on an email message to open it. If it's a website and the subject of the email message is a link, I expect to single click it. Mm-hmm. But if you are building an email application using web technology, in all your designer wisdom, you say, well, no, we have to double click a message to open it. And that's where the confusion starts, because if you don't properly tag your content as being an application, and what all the widgets and other things in your application are, for me it looks like some kind of malfunctioning website usually.
It's the same with sighted users, because an app normally has keyboard navigation, mm-hmm. with the cursor keys. A website doesn't. So if we don't expect on our website to go left and right and go to the next page and the last page, because that's not how the web works.
No.
But in an application, we expect this kind of pagination. So it's like we need to somehow tell people that it is an app. So a question already here was like, how does Aria help with that? Or is there a meta tag that you can put in to, mm-hmm. say like this is an app, or what's going on there?
Yes, there. In Aria, there are certain roles you can apply to elements. And there's the application role. And be careful with that rule, because when you apply it, depending on the screen reader being used, it goes out of its web rendering mode. Most screen readers on Windows have a special mode for web rendering, where you see the web page in a structured way. When you use an application rule, it goes out of that mode. And that means that I should be able to interact with the website as if it was an application. That means it should be totally keyboard navigable, and all elements you use should have the shortcuts I expect. And that's the problem, because if you use some standard graphical toolkit on a native platform, all the elements will have the default shortcuts. That's all being worked out by now. But if you implement your own controls, or you use some library to do that, you will have to make sure that all the keyboard shortcuts that should be should be usable are there. Mm-hmm. For example, if you have I once saw an implementation of a tree of items, and I could move up and down, but I couldn't expand and collapse items using the left and right arrow keys. Mm. Or another example, most people don't know that you can do first letter navigation in most trees. For example, that you just press a letter and you go to the item which starts with that letter. And if you don't know that, you don't implement it. And as long as we all have to implement this kind of basic navigation features, it will never feel as smooth as a native application, I think.
And the problem is that especially with keyboard controls, is that some of the keyboard shortcuts that you would expect in a screen reader or in a desktop app to work is used by browsers for certain things. So you actually can't use those because they do something in the browser rather than like a command, yes. K in other apps would do.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. For example, if you go to YouTube and you play a movie, you can use J and L to seek back and forward 5 seconds or something. Yeah. Where's the documented? I don't know where it is documented, but it's how it works.
Accessibility as an Easter egg.
Yes.
I know actually where that's from. That's from video editing software.
Oh yeah, from Final Cut Pro. Yeah.
It's actually in I think all video editing software is always JNL.
Cool.
But I never use video editing software.
I know, that's the problem.
Why not? Come on. How does YouTube work in terms of the subtitling interface that they do? Is that something you could use for navigating? Because, for example, TED.com allows you a transcript of a video, mm-hmm. so you can jump to a certain word. Is there something like that in YouTube by now?
From what I know, no. It's not there. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I didn't see it. But what I wanted to say about YouTube is the JNL commands interfere with, in this case, Safari. If I press Command L, I go to the location bar. But on YouTube, I go to the location bar and I seek my movie 5 seconds forward.
Oh, so you're trying to go to another website and you just get another soundbite of the video instead.
I get both.
Oh, that's not good.
So that's not good. I guess that's not good in the browser, and it's also not good in the web application, because yeah, what you said, you get conflicting keys sooner or later.
It gets even more interesting when you get into internationalization, that yes. some countries expect other keyboard shortcuts because it's different names for things, and most of the time keyboard shortcuts are abbreviations of the words.
Yes, and different platforms. For example, if you have Gmail or another Google app, they have, I don't know why, but they have accessibility disabled by default, and you have to press a hotkey to enable it.
Hmm.
And that's, from the top of my head, it's control... Oh no, it's Alt Shift Accent Graph something.
So very easy to find by accident.
Of course. And so what's it on a Mac anyway? Is it Command? Is it Control? Is it Option? I don't know. And that's, I don't know where, what. Yeah, I guess they choose that key because otherwise they would get a conflict of any kind. And now they choose a key that most of the users might not be able to find anyway. So. Yes, I don't know what's a better option.
There was a wasn't there a government guideline or like international guideline that every website should have certain hotkeys to go to certain parts of a page? Like there was Alt Zero for homepage and things like that. I think that was years and years ago, but they might have mm-hmm. dismissed that.
I'm not sure if there was really a guideline that said which key should go where, but I saw quite a yeah, a few of those implementations. However, what I find a disadvantage while putting an access key on a link is that if I press that access key in most browsers, I would automatically activate the link. So you just press a key and you activate a link, and you don't know what you activated unless you already knew the website. And if I know the website, I can easily grab a link list. For example, if I want to go to Google Drive, and I don't want to go, but
headings, 50 links, 68 items, one item, drop Drive.
I could go there. If I press Enter now, I would go to Drive. But if they put access keys on these links, I don't think I would use them, because this is as fast as using a hotkey, and it works on every website I know what text to search for.
Yeah, I'm using it myself. I mean, when I see a massive page, I just start searching in it rather than yes. just, especially on my mobile phone when I have a small screen. So a lot of these use cases can be actually sold to customers with like saying like, yeah, it's great for accessibility, but it also means that mm-hmm. you on your small iPhone that doesn't resize in pixels or whatever it is, we had a discussion about that earlier, you can use it much easier there. So it was quite ironic to see when the iPhone came out that it was very, very much acclaimed by lots of blind users that I know. That was like, that's the most touchy, coolest, shiny phone, and then like people can't see it, but it's very good for them because it had VoiceOver installed from mm-hmm. the very beginning. How do you boot something like that? It's like, does it boot into a screen reader? Is there an option for that?
Well, on the iPhone, it's quite interesting implementation. If you are on the setup screen, so if you turn it on for the very first time, you can press the home button 3 times and you will get VoiceOver. And it will stay on after the setup if you turned it on that way. And you can, if you connect an iPhone to iTunes, there's a button called accessibility settings, and you can enable or disable the settings from a PC, which supposedly should have a screen reader then, or a Mac. And that's often a problem. For example, if you look at all the systems that try this, like Windows has Windows Narrator, and that doesn't really work. It's improved in Windows 8, but in early version it's just not really useful. And they sell it as a tool to get up and running, to install another screen reader.
Cool.
Well, and yeah, there is a hotkey to boot Narrator, but that's only there since I think Vista was 7. In the earlier versions, you just had to try and get it up and running.
So it's not as easy as it looks, but it's because that was always a big thing when I talked to people about setting accessibility, and they're like, well, a blind user could never set up his own computer, and they always need somebody to do it for them. And the kind of argument always annoys me, because it's just belittling people that can do things if you mm-hmm. just wouldn't put barriers in their way. So it's a weird situation that we're sometimes in, that like, oh, we need to... So what would you say, sometimes there's false positives when people say, okay, use Aria and then everything is fine and your website is really, really good. What kind of website enhancements do you find that really don't help you?
One thing that really annoys me sometimes is that you already said Aria, but especially larger websites and companies put a great service on their website, and it's called a reading service. You get a nice button and you click it, and it will start reading the page. And usually they claim that it's a good thing for blind people. And I don't know anybody who's blind and who uses such reading utilities, because if you're blind, you have your own reading software, and if you're not blind, well, you probably don't need reading software. So there should be. I think there is a small target group for such things. But first of all, I think reading web page is better done by a browser extension. And second, it's not what some people claim. It's not improving your accessibility by just putting a nice little icon there to present and read your site aloud. It doesn't help, at least blind people. It doesn't help blind people.
It's a big thing for clients, though. It's a yes. feel good thing for them. Like, look, we've done something, and uh-huh. some of them want to get out of being sued that way as well. Like, yeah. look, we've done something, and why? Look, we're nice guys. Why do you say we're not accessible? I found these buttons to be useful for people with dyslexia, though, but they're never sold that way. They're always mm-hmm. used as like, oh yeah, blind people need this stuff.
That's true. As I said, it's true. There is a use for them, but not for the blind, I think.
Yeah. One question here is like, what about banner ads and with videos and that start auto-playing? Do you use AdBlock Plus for that, or?
Usually, yes, because I don't read them anyway. So I don't want to bother with ads.
It's a bit tricky, isn't it? Like, yeah, look at this car.
Yes. and auto-playing videos, if it's a flash video, it might be a good thing. Because at least on Mac, Flash is totally inaccessible. Flash sometimes is praised, well, not really praised, but said as being an accessible technology if the Flash developer implements it well, and that's kind of true on Windows. But on other platforms, it's totally useless. So if it's not an auto playing video, the only solution for me is to scroll the web page to the right position, get the mouse over there, and click somewhere, hoping to find a big play button to start the video, or just walk over to my Windows machine and open it over there. But that's really annoying.
Which is sadly enough a copyright thing or a patent thing, that you actually have to click to start on other platforms, because mm-hmm. there's, oh, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but there's awful things there. But yes. Yeah, autoplay of video is annoying for me as well, so just don't do that. Make it a nice button for people to start. Just in terms of performance, it's a good idea as well. I don't load that video that I don't need. So, well, thanks for that. So we have to move on to get everybody here in the mix. Now that we know that you like Dreamweaver, let's go on with what else you do.
I have.
Can we switch over? Yeah.
I'll start with this example.
Can you describe your condition first of
all? Oh, my condition, of course. I have cerebral palsy, which causes spasms in my hands and my legs. Pretty much is a problem for me to make small movements. I have a trackpad, but if I have a spasm, it can go all over the place. So, you know, sometimes those things are a problem. I can't walk. That's the biggest bummer, but
not that much problematic in websites,
exactly.
Maybe games when you do like Wii stuff.
Wii's okay. Kinect is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really understand that you're sitting down. And when I put my hand down, it connects my wrist to my knee, and thinks it becomes a part of my leg. So
wow.
Really becomes.
Dance games are bad that way, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. I tried Kung Fu Panda, but the panda just keeps jumping and doing stuff and dies every time. So
that's not really encouraging, is it?
Yeah. It's a great game if you want to look at something like that. But
nice.
I brought a couple of examples. This is something, don't look at the data, I just mocked it up. This is a form from UWV. If you're on welfare, they send you the welfare checks. But they want to know every little change that happens in your life. So does your condition or your disability, does it improve? Please send us a form. Are you going to go work? Please send us a form, and so on. This is important information. Do not forget. What's interesting, they have finally decided to give you an online form to fill out, so you don't have to grab a pen and write this down. Writing is hard for me, and my hand cramps up. It takes me about an hour to fill out a simple form. So they made it easier. The only problem is, if you come to the end of the form, which is luckily divided in all kinds of categories and just small things. You fill it out, you move on, small questions. If you come to the end of the form, it asks you to print, and then grab a pen, sign it, fumble around putting it in an envelope and putting it in the mailbox. And it kind of negates the entire purpose of that form.
So they spend a lot of time in making the form accessible and actually usable, not really pretty, as we can see. But at the end, it's the final physical moment that basically stops you from submitting it or having to sign it.
Yeah.
Same with like blind users. When I went for lunch with a friend of mine, and they asked them to sign his bill. And he's like, I don't know what I'm signing here, so I'm not going to pay this. Yeah. So it's a tricky thing, but this is all, again, I think a legal requirement that it has to be a printed document.
Yeah, but you also have DigiD, you know, it's where you have a number assigned to your social security number, and you can use that to fill out forms for the government.
Oh, so you're already known, you already have an identity that is verified.
Yeah, and that's verified, and you don't really, correct me if I'm wrong, have to sign anything for that.
So
there's a way around this.
So it's a classical case of some paper form that has been put on the website and they haven't thought it through to say, like, in the end, it should be just a button saying, like, here, I filled it out, because you already knew who I am.
Well, the excuse the UWV uses, you cannot email us.
So that's useful.
Yeah, it's a company that is somewhere, I don't know, 1988 and doesn't have email. They do. They just don't want you to use it.
Oh, wow.
So that's just weird about this entire thing. And it annoys me because, you know, this helps, but in the end it just negates everything.
Yeah, so something like a digital signature would be more helpful with that. That's a question we had here as well, and that's a discussion I had for a long time as well. It's like, why isn't there websites that ask you up front if you're blind or if you have seen what kind of certain disability do you have to give you a right interface? And I always found it technically a good idea, but actually you shouldn't have to tell people that you are blind. Is that, would that be something that you would be okay with, or would that be something like, this is weird to me as well?
It would be weird to me because it would just mean one more step to take, you know, one more button to click before I can get to the content I want. And I want as little clicks as possible. So it just kind of counteracts that point.
Yeah.
And I know it would be easier if a website would tailor itself to the user. But again, you have blind people, you have people that have bad eyesight.
It would be a massive drop down with 10,000 disabilities, so yeah. It really is not that easy.
Every disability is unique, so it's going to be a real pain to get that right.
It's disappointing that even somebody who should know about this, who actually is the government initiative that actually deals with people's needs, that fails at that certain moment. You have a few other demos there. What else did you have?
I have one. Don't be blown away by this beautiful design. it's been like this for as long as I can remember. So that's going to be at least 8 years.
It's a supermarket with pink and yellow and big arrows as the navigation for you.
I do not understand why no one has ever told them this is not beautiful.
This is on purpose. They want to appear cheap and affordable. That's why their flyers and stuff looks like that as well.
Wow.
It's a psychological thing. Painful too.
Yeah. what happens in this website, and forgive me for the horizontal scrolling, it's screen size thing. You have to pick one of these buttons. Sorry, I lost the English word. But either get the folder or go to the site or the first choice. And whatever you do, it doesn't matter because you're going to get this navigation and you're going to get that same link over here, you're going to get that same link over here. So who really cares about that extra click? It's pointless. And it's one more thing that a user with a disability has to do.
So it's like one of those flash tunnel pages, like look how beautiful our buttons are and choose one of them.
You want to see this one slide over here? So, like, this is great. What it actually does on a bigger screen size, it has I think it's an iframe. I didn't check it, but
yeah, it is one.
It has an iframe inside, and it has scroll bars inside the page, and you can scroll as long as you stay inside that iframe. But if you go outside, your page doesn't scroll that easily anymore. Hmm. So, again, you lose a little bit of easy functionality for me when you go outside that iframe.
It's what we talked earlier about as well. It's like simplifying your interface would help everybody here. For starters, you don't have that extra click, and nobody needs to welcome to our website pages anymore. It's not 1997 where we have to explain what a website is. So it's pretty interesting to see that.
I think with the whole digital autograph thing, it's mainly a thing from the government that they're afraid of fraud, or either way that they cannot confirm it's really you putting on the signature. But as far as I'm concerned, you could easily tackle that by sending some sort of confirmation email. Like said, if you have really filled in this form and put your digital signature under it, please click this link to confirm. Or you could even send what I really like to do, send you a bunch of paper saying this is what you filled in on the form. If you don't agree, please call us now. Something like that. There are many ways I think you could work around the fear of purely a fraud, things like that.
We're working on a system called Persona that would allow you to verify your email as your identity and then log in with one button on every website.
It's
the fraud thing is fascinating me. Like when people say, I don't use my credit card online because it could be stolen, but they're totally happy if a waiter goes away with their credit card for 20 minutes.
It's
a very interesting point.
It is.
So in summary, because we have to wrap up here, what would you say is the other things that make you the happiest about what's happening already, and what should people do more to help you out on the web or to stop you from being annoyed?
I think in most... is my mic off?
Yeah.
No, it isn't. I think in most cases it's... don't think of the web as just being a design and code and being done with it. Think about these things. You know, I see a lot of designers that never think about interaction design. They just go for the beauty and then code it and they're done. And look what I did. And as soon as you start doing interaction design, you very quickly find out that some things might or might not work. And often if you think to yourself, well, this is too close, you are definitely, these two elements are too close together, they're definitely going to be too close together for someone with a disability.
So don't spare on the space.
No. White space is your best friend.
I think two very important things is first, gladly, as we pointed out on the very beginning of our talk here, is that more and more developers and publishers are thinking about accessibility issues in general. So also for a big audience, and that might have a positive flow towards the more niche-related markets. And secondly, and I think that's the most important thing, is that we are creating awareness. By being here today, by talking to you, by letting all these people share that with us, that's the main thing. That's the thing, how we can make people think about it and look towards the future and think, yeah, it's easily implementable. It doesn't have to cost too much time-wise or money-wise. And we can make a whole big group happy with it.
Cool. Thanks. Any last words from?
Well, I think that we are here with three different, well, accessibility point of views is really important, because when I hear talks about accessibility, it usually starts and ends with, oh yeah, those blind guys with screen readers and such. But there's more to accessibility, and I think there's a huge overlap between accessibility and usability, as you both showed, using spacing issues and such. So I think this is really good to see accessibility in a more broad perspective.
Splendid. Thank you so very much for doing this. I think we all learned a lot. So give him a big hand. Thank you very much.